into. We'd like to welcome everyone out to our regular city council meeting today, February 25th, 2020, 4 p.m. Go ahead and have a roll call.
All right. Justin is excused. He is at the rural water conference. Kevin also is excused.
When do we do this?
He is on his way to Arizona. Mike?
Here.
Russell?
Here.
Rodney?
Here.
And Sam?
Here.
A flag and a flag.
We'll do it on the second one. It's not on the agenda, so we're going to skip it till we go to the next one.
Okay.
Then we'll start doing it. Bo was just asking a question about the open seminar. As I said, we won't do it on this one because we're going to change it for the next city council. So that's what that was all about. Approval of agenda items.
Make a motion that we approve the agenda items for city council meeting February 25th, 2020 at 4 p.m. regular meeting.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, I have the motion by Sam to accept and Rondi to second the approval of the agenda items for the regular city council meeting February 25th, 2020 at 4 p.m. The next item on the agenda is approval of claims.
Is that for a motion for everyone? Is everyone approved?
Yes.
All in favor?
All in favor.
Aye.
Good to keep me on my toes. Okay, next item, approval of claims.
I've been through them, so.
We have the register invoice from 2/9/2020 to 2/24/2020 and the dollar amount of $105,959.42.
The question on it, I think just cut it off. What is the, it says construction and for the 1-inch road base. It's, I think cut off whatever was typed underneath it.
Which page?
There's a whole bunch from Christensen Rock Products.
It's construction
in progress
because the GL that's used is for the substation.
Oh, that's so what I just wondered.
It's almost
okay.
Done, but it's still considered construction in progress.
Okay. So it's just progress.
Yeah, it's just the way the GL.
The progress got kind of squished off there.
I had a question about the, on page 3. At the bottom, the Hyatt Place, hotel for 2 for water school.
That's for a whole week.
So that is a week.
Yeah.
For 2 guys.
2 guys, okay. Both Lynn and Colter are down there right now.
Okay, that's where he's at. Okay.
Yeah. They're down to and that that's Rural Water Association meeting in
yeah.
St. George.
They have to certify, don't they?
Some training.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then one for Birmingham Enterprises on page 2. Delivery of VE Slick.
So we ordered the boat for the de-icer and that from Redmond.
Uh-huh.
And this company, Birmingham Enterprises, their trucks brought it up to us, delivered it to the city shop.
And that's
just the trucking cost of the truck.
If they're salt?
Well, it's called the VE split. I don't know what it is, but yeah.
It's a mixture that they use.
It's the cinders is one of them. Yeah,
the cinders.
Well, the cinders, what they call it, but it's a, it comes out of Fillmore.
Okay.
That's where it actually comes from. And I'm guessing that, which page is that on again?
I've seen it.
It's the Birmingham truck.
And it did come out of Fillmore.
Tired to bring it up to them.
It's like red vulcan and the crush and put in with the salt.
Okay. Yeah, I knew Burningham was a trucking company, I just wasn't sure what the FOE was getting.
Right.
What the product was.
So I've noticed that we use, like, Christensen, we use Allred, and we use the Terry R. Brotherson pits, do we try to keep that pretty even?
I think they do, don't you, Shane?
Yeah, we just, yeah.
I think sometimes it's whoever's available to just send it to us too.
We'll get more out of Christensen, so Christensen could have any, you know, rotates and stuff, and take Allred's.
I just noticed that, I just noticed things all out there, that's a good thing.
Yeah, we try to.
Try to keep everybody.
Keep everyone on it.
Yeah, well, that's the best way to do it, is move it around, make them be competitive.
The only question other, I think, I know, is who's, so on page two still again, there's a hep B vaccine for Jay Thompson, who's Jay Thompson?
That's one of our full employees.
Okay.
We offer that vaccine to them, and they will go get it, the city pays for it.
That would explain why, you know, where they're at, okay. Not really all the cool people. Who is your CDL physical for on page eight?
Cameron. He found a place that was for 85 on that?
50. What does it say on there?
Says 80, but.
Eighty, yeah.
When did, we've always just used our own insurance pay for it.
Yeah, there's a new coding or something out at the hospital that if they do that, it costs them $225 out of their pocket to do it. You know, and I'm not sure what it is. I was just told that they've been doing the coding wrong all these years, and now that they've figured it out, it's been caught. And we have to pay $225. And Cameron found this place up there that does it. That's what they do, where the CDL physicals and it's a lot cheaper. So.
Oh, they have to go up there.
So he went up there to do it instead of paying $225.
Save.
Other than time to travel.
Yeah, he's already hitting up there.
Yeah, if he's already going, then it makes sense.
It's $280 out here.
$225, I believe, is what Cameron told me that he was going to be charged.
And that was on their own personal, right? Insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And now the city's picking them up?
The city's always picked
up. We've
always
paid for it.
Not a reoccurring one. Not a, they never have with us, over in our department.
The city pick up all of our guys.
So the 13.
Required by the city, so.
13 years I was doing it, we never got, and my guys never did that. We had to pay for it out of our own pocket, out of our own insurance. Just curious. So, anyway.
We need to look at and make sure the policy's same across the board.
Yeah.
That's what we
need. Yeah, that's what we're doing, right?
Yeah, that's what we need to look at more than anything on that one there. See what the policy is on that for sure.
Yeah, I'm not against it. I just, if it's possible, it's
going to be
both.
It's got to be for everybody.
Yeah.
For sure. Any other questions?
I don't have any.
No.
Okay. Anybody make a motion to?
I'll make a motion that we approve the invoice register for 2/9/2020 to 2/24/2020 in the amount of $105,559.42.
Okay. I'll second that motion.
Okay, I have. I have the motion by Russ and seconded by Rondi to approve the claims. Invoice register from 2/9/2020 to 2/24/2020 in the dollar amount of $105,959.42. Roll call.
Russell?
Yes.
Rondi?
Yes.
And Sam?
Yes.
Okay, requisitions. Do you want to come up and present them, Shane?
Yeah. Okay, like I said, this is which one you're looking at.
Whichever one you want to start with, you tell us.
Okay, let's start on the historical light, the revised one.
That is that one everybody's desk wasn't in your packet.
It's rolled on the revised.
We had another meeting this morning on this project. Like we said, we've been working on this project for 3 years now, and the way things, the economy's going, they wanted us to order everything right now. So there's no holdup on, because I was just going to order poles and lights and the bases, and I'm going to order the rest of the equipment and stuff. But now they said we want to, let's just place a big order so everything's coming right now. And our timeline, we're hoping to have it done by the May 25th. Timeline, because that's when we get the flowers and put them out. So we're hoping we'll have everything done by then. After talking with HC Fabrication and everything, they said that it's possible, depending on how far the poles are out. And so it's probably good we're jumping on a little early right now. So that's for everything. The original price, we kind of changed the plan a little bit, was $178,000 for the material. This is $174,000, I believe.
Yeah, $174,000, $47,050.
Yeah. So we're going to be doing the light. We're not doing the stinger down inside. We're just going to do sonotube and cement, and then the bolts, which I think is going to be better for the project.
And it'll still have the breakaway.
Yeah.
Breakaway like
the
UDOT requires.
Yeah, they were going to do the 3/4. But with by the time you get the weight on the poles, the 3/4 bolts, but by the time you get the weight on the poles with the flags and the wind and the flowers, we went with 1 inch just to make sure that was covered. So they're not going to come down unless they are hit. So, and speaking with UDOT, everything was good there. So.
Okay. So, overall, the project, then it should lower it just to 4,000. Or have you got an actual bid of the instant? Because this is just material.
That's price. It. So yeah, there's a second requisition. The original. I got it right here.
Oh yeah, it's right here.
So we're just going to do an upfront. What I'd like to do is just do an upfront of what was it, 23,000?
Yeah.
And originally it was an upfront of 29. It was the original bid asked for $147,000. We got it down to $116,000. So we're only going to pay the 23 upfront. So I think things are looking pretty good.
So is that, and that's for the company to come down and put it in?
Right. Yeah, that's the upfront cost to have them come down, and then at the end they will do the pipe invoice.
And then did you guys change, just out of curiosity, you guys probably signed some kind of contract with them, or is it after you pay it?
After we get, I will. After we get the money.
After we get the approval.
Yeah.
Approval.
Yeah, because they have to follow UDOT specs, right, and everything when they start closing section off.
Okay. I only have one question. Comparing the two, one says 49 and one says 50 poles. Are you aware of that?
No.
So on this $23,000 one, it says 49 poles, and on this one, it says 50.
It should be 50. That's my bad. Oh, we're only doing 49. We're ordering 50. one extra.
So be 49 installed, we're ordering one extra?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, just noticing that discrepancy, so.
And then we're not doing the breakaway on the ones out behind the stores. We're just doing the breakaway along the main.
Along the state and main?
Yeah. So that's going to save us money there too.
Are they required back there for any kind of?
No, just anything over 35, around 35 miles an hour.
Miles an hour, okay.
This is in partnership with UDOT?
Yes, yeah, UDOT's going to pay $40,000.
Right. I couldn't remember what that. I knew there's a reimbursement there that.
Yeah, so once we finish the project, we send in our receipts to them and they will reimburse us the $40,000. So, because we're bringing everything up to code.
Well, I'll make a motion that we, for approval of the requisition, the revised requisition number 2202-0201438 in the amount of $174,047.50.
I'll second it.
Okay. I have Sam making the motion and Russ seconding the requisition of number, revised requisition of 2202-0201438 in the dollar amount of $174,047.50. Roll call.
Russell?
Yes.
Rondi?
Yes.
And Sarah?
Yes.
While we're on that, talk about the requisition 2202-0201431 for the requisition of $23,398, which is a 20% down to start the project. Are they going to power coat the existing benches then too, like was originally presented?
No, that's part of what we cut out.
Okay.
So we can do that whenever. That's what brought that and a few other things we dropped out of there, so to get it down to $116. So we can save a little bit of money there. I figure we can paint the benches and stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's not too hard.
We've done that before.
Yeah.
Okay.
When are they planning on starting, do you know, Shane, to take care of?
I'm good, if everything's approved, I'm hoping to meet with Jerry, who's the HC fabrication guy, next week. And then as soon as the poles get here, which are 4 to 5 weeks out, so about another month.
Another month or so.
Yeah.
How long are they thinking to take due?
It kind of depends on how the meeting goes. We're going to have to take one down and pull it out and see what everything entails, and then they can give us a
rough estimate.
Okay, anybody have any more questions?
I don't think so.
And I'll make a motion that we approve requisition 2202-0201431 for the 20% down on the Main Street lighting project, and the amount of $23,398.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, I have Russell making the motion and Rondi second it, that we accept the requisition of 2202-0201431 for the 20% down on the historical lighting project for the dollar amount of $23,398. Roll call.
Russell?
Yes.
Rondi?
Yes.
And Sarah?
Yes.
Thank you, guys. We'll get the ball rolling on that then.
Yep.
Did you guys get a chance? Is this in your packet?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Just kind of give you a see what it's, the savings we're going to be doing with these new lights and the payout. I thought that was pretty interesting. the company that's going to be doing, they kind of put that together for us, and so on the light savings.
Yeah.
We got another requisition that's not yours, no, huh?
We got a couple more, Chris. We got two more.
Two more?
He was just showing us the savings.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine's not color-coded like yours.
So 15 years is what they're figuring the total payback is, right?
Yes.
15.2. Plus, there'll be a lot better lights.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, hopefully it'll last for 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
Somebody was telling me they put LED all the way through the house, knocked $70 off the power, I believe.
Yeah, we still have the incentive programs out there. People that put in, if they change their fixtures, not bulbs, but if they change their fixtures out, they can turn the money in and get money back from UMass, which is one of them. I had the lady coming down. I talked with Jeannie. She's from UMass. Mackenzie's going to be coming down on the 10th, explaining our incentive programs, so you guys are all well aware of it. And then hopefully you can get that in the paper and stuff. So
that'd be good. Let the citizens know. Help them out.
Yeah, so hopefully she says she's good to come down on the 10th.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah, well, that's pretty good savings.
The other requisition is the annual oil analysis that we have SD Myers do on all our substation stuff. And that's been budgeted out of our professional services every year.
So that's the requisition 22020201516 for the $2,614.
Well, I'll make a motion that we approve requisition 22020201516. In the amount of $2,614 for the, what'd you call it, Shane?
Oil analysis.
Oil analysis.
I'll make a second.
Okay. Russ making the motion and Sam seconding it for requisition 22020201516 in the dollar amount of $2,614. Roll call.
Russell.
Yes.
Ronnie.
Yes.
And Sam.
Yes.
And the other thing is something that's come up in the last couple weeks talking with Mike Bowles. That'd be this right here. He said
that we need to just on the sneak over here.
I don't think we need approval for this. I think I just need approval to go across the runway out there to get power over. If you guys look at your map, right next to where the old green polka dot building is, and where Timberhawk has all that wood out there on that lot, they actually own the lot across the west too. But he wants to come across out of that box, go 250 feet, and put a transformer, 75 kVA transformer, and a service, because they want to put a big saw there with the metal building. They want to get a saw out of Germany to cut some of the lumber out there. And he'd be willing to pay for all that, digging across and installing everything. And that's what this estimate is for. But I wanted to give you guys, see if it's going to be an okay to go across that runway.
Be all right with me. Get it done before we chip it. Do the stuff we're going to do this spring, summer on it. I think it's a good time to get it done.
So he's going to do a 100 amp, three-phase, 480 volt service.
So he already got the building permit stuff worked on it.
Just
Like you said, it probably definitely worth doing it now before you do any more work to the runway to better it.
That would be my only comments, if it would be better to bring it from the other road, but it's a lot closer probably.
But it's 400 feet coming from the other box, so, and this is only 250.
I guess with him owning the lot, he knows what he's going to do with the rest of the lot. I guess that would be my only concern to approach him with, to make sure he didn't want to put another building or something else on his lot to have to come from both directions that way.
But what we'll do with on that, so we'll change these, where this box is here, there's actually for each phase, what they call 4 points. We'll have to change that to a 5 point. And so we can actually serve, because he owns a lot across here, so we can do two more services across on that same
On side. That east side of the road?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not going to short us any on the 4 points and everything. So we want to make sure we're going to do that before we heat everything up. So.
Yeah.
We had things there.
Yeah. Because that was my only concern, is him owning that whole lot. It's like if he wants to put another building, it's like it'd be easier to come one direction, put another junction box in.
Yeah, yeah.
Then cross and dig across. But yeah, I don't see a problem with it.
Yeah, I was trying to talk him into going the 400 feet coming down and just doing the primary line, extension down his property line instead of cutting across the.
It's cheaper to cut across.
Yeah.
I think Mike's pretty good to work with, isn't he?
Yeah, we've always worked well with him. But he said he's willing to come here and pay the materials up front, and then when we get everything done, do the final deal, so like we usually do. He wants it done by the end of March. That's what his time frame's looking like.
Do you have those materials on hand? Or are they that close to?
We do have them on hand, actually. We have a 75 kVA transformer to keep in stock because they're 10 to 12 weeks out.
That's what I was thinking. You won't get a transformer that quick.
No. And so we do keep a 75 on hand. That's a common one. And so we have that on hand. And so he'll buy the one we have on hand. Well, we actually have two. But he'll get that, and then we'll replenish it with another one. So we keep those on hand. Just for stuff like this that comes up because they're so far out. Like we keep some on hand for the hospital, school district, and all that. So
how big is this building going to be, do you know?
I don't know.
It's supposed to be like a 40 by 50 building.
It'll be a steel building, huh?
Yeah, steel building.
This is the site serve guys, right?
Yes.
Obviously, I think it's a good idea.
I'm just curious for codes and stuff, what he's got for if you might not be looking at doing water, if there's a water line that needs to come across to the
road. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
So that you're not making more than one cut down the road here a month later.
The water line on the east side or the west side? Of
the water goes down along the...
Come down around Contour Arena. Yeah. It's clear on the west side of those lots, along the west side of the runway.
It'd be interesting to find out if you need water so that you're running. It'd be good to run through the same area.
He'd probably have to bring it off if you want.
He'd have to bring it off the east road.
He'd have to bring it off the east road so he don't have to go through all that.
Because anybody on the west side of the runway is all coming off the west vents.
Right.
Water lines ran from the Contour Arena around on the west side of the vents.
Which I think you already have water still out there on that lot, though.
I don't know if
we're paying for it, but I think there's a stub out right there.
Probably clear up beyond the east side.
Yeah, on the east side, yeah.
I do need to get with him on that fire hydrant, but because they block that fire hydrant every day.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that one, we don't need to make a vote or anything on that one.
No.
Right? Okay. Okay, thanks, Shane.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, next thing on the agenda, the Youth Council report, the trip to the state capitol. This is exciting to hear this. Reading some of your comments, it's interesting.
Well, Well, we had a wonderful time, thanks to those three. All of you who support, inspiring youth, that helped so much in our city all year long. And so it was a real fun time, and they'll tell you what they got out of it.
Okay.
But it was a wonderful experience for me, anyway. Okay, this is Scott Chalk, he's our new city council mayor.
Yeah, I had a great time, I think we all had a good time up there. Especially because we, Lieutenant Governor Cox, you know, he's kind of our hookup up there, so. But we also, when we went up there, we first met with Representative Owens. And it was nice because he really talked us through a lot of things and helped kind of remind us a little bit about what it's all about up there. And then even let me go down with him and sit on the floor with him, so.
The House of Representatives.
Yeah, the House of Representatives. So that was really cool. A little intimidating at first, but once you got down there, I realized they're obviously eating their McDonald's and stuff. It's really pretty simple.
So did you take your McDonald's with you too?
No, I wasn't prepared, I guess.
They were all dressed up. They looked
yeah.
That's
so
great.
So that was a really fun experience. That was, because I went up last year as well. And we didn't get to do that. It was a little bit different than last year. I really liked that, just to kind of really get a feel for what actually happens up there. And then we got to go to the Gold Room, too, where they, you know, host really important people there, presidents and any other important leaders. And that was when Lieutenant Governor Cox talked to us about kind of where he got his start and the importance of just community involvement and stuff and what some of his motives were. I just thought that was really cool to not only see where he came from, but to see what, you know, where he's at now and what he's doing and how he still supports his roots. But I just felt really privileged to go up there and see that and kind of see how our country runs a little bit. It's always a great reminder and kind of exciting.
And then Kevin Stallings talked to us.
He had a really great talk before we left, and talked to us about kind of how to create an impact. You know, it really just takes volunteers, people willing to, people with a desire to, and a motive, and you know, that's what makes it happen. And it really focused on the voice of the people, and that felt really good. And told us how he appreciated us, and it's exciting and good to know that, you know, we are the voice and we can really make something happen if that's what needs to go and if that's what people want.
Yeah. When I went up there...
tell them your name.
Yeah, tell us your name.
Kenan Schumann. When I went up there, when we first talked to Representative Owens, something really stood out to me is he's definitely there for the people. He said to us that our opinion is just the same as his opinion. And that really stood out to me. And as I was up there, I could tell that it changed my perspective of how they're not only there for themselves, but they're there for the community mostly. And that helped me to know how to be a better community person and how to care for other people and what they need before I do. So that changed a big perspective for me. And they were really nice and they made you comfortable. And that's what I mean. So.
Cool. Thank you.
I'm Julie Jensen. What Keen was saying, Representative Owens, had a really big impact on me. And he told us that he's not that important because he's just a voice for the people and he represents what we want. And we should, like, all help out, and we should, we should, like, all come together as a community, and if something needs to be done, then he's there to help, and we're here to make things happen.
Okay. I'm Joshua Thompson. I enjoyed being able to meet our representative Owens. He made us all feel welcomed, and he explained to us how things went. I really enjoyed being able to talk to Lieutenant Governor Cox. He answered all our questions, even the ones that weren't political related. And he told us that he let us know that even if you don't have that much of a background, it's still possible to make a difference.
Yeah, it was a great trip. We really enjoyed it and appreciate all the support to allow it to happen. It's a good experience, and I think it's one that, you know, really a rare one that not many people will get. So, yeah, I think we all really enjoyed it.
I read your comments here, and most all of you said about the Gold Room. So tell us about it. What was so special?
The history behind it, I think. The people that have been in there and what it was used for.
I think George Bush. W. Bush was in the building, and he was in that room, Donald Trump. And then I think there was ambassadors from Russia and Israel in that room. Mm-hmm.
And the Mount Pleasant
used to be
council.
now we're getting to the important people.
Well, if you saw the ropes, they have ropes around it everywhere, and no one else could get on.
Yeah.
And there were other groups of youth there. And they just were all like, and they're sitting around the whole table. I mean, it was pretty impressive to them.
That makes a different impression on you, that being able to go in there where everybody else can't, too.
Yeah.
He said there's millions of dollars worth of gold in that room. It's gold leafed everywhere. It's beautiful.
Wow.
Really impressive.
Been there a long, long time. I know that.
Yes.
My son was a bodyguard for Governor Huntsman.
Really? Wow.
And so we got to take the tour of all that up there and everything. So it's pretty cool. But it's pretty cool that you guys and gals are doing what you're doing. You know, they had some good youth up there. And I'm proud that you're willing to do what you're doing. Because it's the more input we have from the city, and it don't matter, like I said, you're as important as anybody sitting up here or anybody in this community. And in some cases, more important because you're a voice and an example up there in that school. And they look up to you and they see these things, and it might make a difference to one of them up there, too. You never know how far your influence reaches. So keep on doing what you're doing.
I know I got feedback from Lieutenant Governor Cox's office, and they just said, what fine you these are. They are exceptional. They were really pleased that we were there. One thing that impressed me a lot about being at the Capitol and talking to the legislators and being there was that I guess I've been listening on the news and there's so much contention all the time. Well, we all went in so happy and excited to be there, and we were so happy the whole time touring and going everywhere and talking to people. And not once did we hear anyone say anything about somebody that they're running against. Like Lieutenant Governor Cox, we never heard anything about who was running against him. He just said, if I'm in, it'll be great. If I'm not, I'll be back on the ranch. But it was so comforting. I mean, it was real calm and almost like the spirits there. It was a neat feeling, and same thing with Darren Owens. I think that's why we were so impressed with them, is because of that. They didn't say one negative thing about anyone, and he's running for senator, and we know Lieutenant Governor Cox is running for governor, and I mean, it would have been easy to say, vote for me, do this, get out there, you know, but they really didn't, and I was really impressed with that, and we came away with a wonderful feeling. You can see that.
Yes.
Just as we went in with what. And so I was really happy with that. Really nice. And thank you all for that.
Thank you guys for the way you represented the city and what you do for the city. You need to be commended for that. And again, your example of the school.
And I think they deserve a round of applause. I mean, honestly,
I do too.
Take a lot of luck stand up and experience it. And so I commend you guys. And you know, I did read the stories as well.
And so we're sorry they couldn't.
I think we appreciate the opportunity, even just with all the activities in the city. It's fun to see how things go on and how they're put together and to help participate in that. So it makes it more meaningful.
Well, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
We've got to shake your hand, though. You can't get away here.
Thank you.
It's kind of interesting reading the reports here.
What an experience.
Thank you, Colleen, for your... Colleen, thank you for going with them and helping out there so much.
It's my privilege.
We appreciate that.
Neat experience.
You do a lot of things. It's your privilege, but it sure helps this city.
Will you help us? Thank you. And the staff over here, they're amazing.
Yep, they are. Next item on the agenda, city finance audit report, financial audit report. By Larson & Company.
I've been trying to figure out where you live out there.
I don't know if I need to tell you.
I go by there and I'm looking for your place and I'm looking for Brother Stallings' place.
So if you're coming south, as soon as you drop down by the red covered bridge, the Spring Hill Ranch, you drop down that little hill into that valley and then there's the long hill up.
The red covered, okay.
So I'm just south of that. So when the lane splits into two and goes up the hill is my driveway at the bottom of the hill. So I have a blue roof barn. It's the only blue roof up there.
Okay.
And then Kevin's dad, he lives at the top of that hill on the other side of the road, clear back up against the mountain. So he's got a really long driveway. All right, this isn't going to be as exciting as what we just had with the city council.
Oh, darn.
All right. Well, since there's some new council members and new mayor, I probably spent a lot of time in the financial statements just because it's, your year's almost three-fourths over now. I apologize that we didn't get down here in December. It was kind of different. I don't even remember what happened. It was going to cancel. City council meeting in December, and then I was gone most of January. I was out of the country, and so anyway, thanks for letting us come down and visit with you for a minute and talk through things. So just for your information, I'll kind of go through some of the reports that we're required to issue every time we issue an audit. It's pretty standard simple language. You're going to see the same language every year. They don't change very often. Once in a while they will, but on page one, so if you look at the bound, we're going to start in the boundary. So this is your actual audited financial statements. And the reason why this one's not included is this one is just for the council. So this one, if somebody requests your financials, this is what you send them. We don't have to send them this. It's not their letter. This is just for you guys. All right. So really, the way it's laid out, the first paragraph just says that we've audited financial statements as of June 30th, 2019. And then it lays out your responsibility and management's responsibility. A lot of times people get confused because when they think when we do an audit that we're the ones preparing the financial statements and there are financial statements and we take responsibility for them, and that's not really the case. It's really management's job to know and understand the accounting principles and make sure that the financial statements are free and clear of mistakes, whether that's by fraud or error, just
mistakes. I mean, you have to have control of the place in order to have clean financial records. And so our job is to come in and verify what has been done by management. So we take the trial balance and the financial statements, and we break down each of the balances into smaller components. And we'll either get verification by third-party confirmations. We run a series of tests. We can do predictive tests. We can do analysis tests. And we can, you know, spot material misstatements that either need to be corrected or should be corrected in order to make the financial statements materially correct. And our opinion, so if you look at page, no, our different pages, but let's see. I'll kind of break down a couple of the sections for you. Turn to page 18 and 19. So these are your governmental funds. So you're obviously your general fund, your RDA fund, the municipal building fund, and then a column for the other non-major funds. So each one of these columns is an opinion unit. So we give an opinion on each one of these units. And then if you want to flip over to page 22, these are your business type funds, your proprietary fund type funds, or your utility funds, or I mean, all of them are synonymous. You got the water, the sewer, electric, and then the irrigation fund, which is a non-major. The difference between major and non-major is if your assets or liabilities or revenue equal in the, like, just in the governmental, if it's 10% or more of the funds in total, then it's a major fund. If it's an and the same with the enterprise funds, and then overall, if it is greater than 15%, then it becomes a major fund. So that just means that it becomes its own opinion that we have to give an opinion on. Otherwise, they're all grouped together in that non-major funds. Plus, the difference between major and non-major funds, really, it's just the size of and the money that is going out of those funds. So each one of those columns, each get their own opinion. So if you flip back the page, if you want to record. So our opinion is that the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the position of the governmental activities, the business activities, each major fund, and the aggregate remaining fund information of Mount Pleasant City. If there was an issue, so that's an unqualified opinion, meaning that's a clean opinion. If there was an issue in one of the funds, we have a couple audits where we actually either will qualify an opinion or we'll give an adverse opinion, meaning we know there's a mistake and they're materially incorrect and they're not going to do anything to fix it, or we can't get enough information to give an opinion. And that can happen on individual funds. Then we would list out each fund and what opinion each one gave or each one had. But where all the funds had an unqualified opinion, it's just contained in that one paragraph. All right, require supplementary information. So just for your information, there are parts of the financial statements that we don't give an opinion on, and that is the management's discussion analysis that immediately follows the audit report. What that section is really a comparison between last year and this year. And I like to call it kind of the reader's digest of the financial statements. That's kind of where you can get an overview of where the city's at. It's kind of a condensed version of the financial statements, what is upcoming this next year. And because it's information that you can put in there to let readers of the financial statements know a little bit more about the city, what the city's doing, where the city's at compared to next year, what your plans are for the future. We don't give an opinion on that section. However, all the numbers in the MD&A tie down to the financial statements. We do make sure that they all tie down, that the numbers are accurate. And then the other required supplementary information is on page 49. So this is your budget schedule with your general fund. So that's actually required to be in the financial statements. And you can choose to either have it as required supplementary information, or there's people that actually put it in with the financial statements. It doesn't really matter where it belongs. And then there's schedules that belong to the URS for your retirement, for your Utah retirement system that are required to be disclosed now. And that information is also required, but it's not a part of basic financial statements, so we don't give an opinion on those sections. And then, right after that section, if you look at page 55, so this is all your non-major funds. So the capital project fund, the debt service fund, the permanent fund, which is your cemetery fund, those three are non-majors, and so what they do is they sum up into that last column, and that last column ties out to the governmental non-major funds column. And the supplementary information, the reason why it's in here is because then you can see the detail of those funds. You don't have to have this information. All you need to have is the totals in the other financial statements. But it's kind of nice to be able to see what all of the funds are doing, what the activity is in each fund. All right, so that's the different parts of the financial statement. I want to turn to page 57. This is a report that we're required to issue on because it's a governmental audit. There are certain standards that they call it the yellow book, but there's certain extra things that we have to do in a government audit that aren't done in a for-profit business or a public company. One of the things is we look at your internal controls, and we have to make sure that they're actually in place and they're functioning. We're not required to test them. But we do test transactions and go through like a walkthrough and watch a transaction from beginning to end to make sure that the controls are in place and that they're actually functioning. And a lot of times we'll talk to the staff about holes that we see where they can bolster up their controls if need be. All right, the last letter is one that's required by our state auditor. So there are certain things that we're required to look at each year. And the ones that we're required to look out for the city this year, budgetary compliance, fund balance, the justice court system, the retirement system, cash management is just, you have to file reports with the Utah Money Management Act and then you make sure that you're following their rules and guidelines. Impact fees, restricted tax, and Open Public Meetings Act, treasurer's bond, the enterprise fund transfers, that's if you transfer money out of your enterprise funds now, there's certain requirements that you have to file with the state and then disclose to the public before you do it. So those are areas that we look at and we make sure that the city's in compliance with those regulations that are found in the Utah Code. We actually give an opinion on compliance, and our opinion on compliance is also the same as an unqualified opinion. There weren't any things significant that we would have to actually put it as a part of this letter, nothing material. There were a couple of things that we'll talk about that there are state compliance issues, but they were rather minor. So with that, we'll turn to this little guy. Like I said, this is just for the council and management. And these are things that we're just required to communicate to you, and I'll probably go over them every year. If you want to start with the qualitative aspects of the accounting practice, it just reiterates that really management's required to know and understand the rules of accounting and how government accounting works. There was a new pronouncement that came out this year that the city adopted. And that really just probably doesn't even mean very much to anybody in the world. Some of the new GASB pronouncements, I think it's just job security that they have to come up with stuff. But what they did is anytime you have debt, it used to be lumped together. Now we have to separate what debt is bond related versus what it would be direct borrowing. So a direct borrowing is anything that you get from a bank. So I know that there was a loan to pay off, that's the building.
Loan to pay off Contoy?
No, Contoy, what's the?
Pool?
No.
Substation, wasn't it? Is that? There's
the
a block.
Wasatch Block Building?
Yeah, Wasatch Block Building. Okay. So that's a direct borrowing, so that's going to be separated. So now they're just separated into two different sections. And also what you're required to do is you're required to disclose what collateralizes each portion of your debt. So a lot of times when you have bonds, and if you get a bond for a sewer project, then you know, you're going to put in sewer lines everywhere. And if you ever default on that, they can't rip up those sewer lines and have it be worth any value. So that doesn't, that's not collateralizing the bonds. And so we have to disclose what actually is collateralizing that. And, you know, in that instance, it would be future revenue that you're going to generate from sewer billings. A lot of times it's sales tax or, you know, property tax, whatever it is securing those bonds, you're just required to disclose that. There wasn't anything else new that came out this year. Estimates, just remember that, well, there's always going to be estimates in the financial statements. You know, accounts receivable write-offs, the accumulated depreciation, the way you depreciate and how long you depreciate assets, that's estimates. And our job is to make sure, we look at your estimates every year and make sure that they're consistent and that they're reasonable. You don't want to depreciate a $500,000 asset over 200 years versus write it off all in 1 year. That's a huge difference to your financial statements. And so we have to make sure, okay, well, reasonableness says you're going to write it off over 10 years. And then that, what that does is it keeps your financial statements from being up and down and up and down because of estimates, to where you really can't have reliable data to go back and compare last year or the year before. If estimates are changing significantly, then you're not going to be able to get good numbers. And so we make sure that if you try to make it stay as consistent as possible. Difficulties encountered performing the audit. There weren't any difficulties in dealing with management. Like was said before, the staff in the city, they're really good and they're on top of things. We get things as we ask for it. And I've never really had to feel worried about not getting information or having to wait for information. Usually when I have to wait, or my team has to wait for, you know, 2, 3, 4 days or weeks, then, you know, I start to get a little bit nervous of, okay, why can't you find the information, or you know, what's happening? Are you trying to recreate information? But none of that occurred here. Corrected and uncorrected misstatements. There weren't any, I don't even think we had any material journal entries. There weren't any uncorrected misstatements. There weren't any disagreements with management. Management representations, we get a letter that's signed by management that they're not aware of any fraud, that they're not aware of any compliance issues, they're not aware of any litigation that we haven't been made aware of, that they're in compliance with any grant agreements or debt agreements, debt covenants. So really, it's a full disclosure document that we get from the city just to make sure that we've been given all the information that we need to give a correct opinion. Consultations with other accountants. If there is an issue that arises and there's a disagreement, if we have a disagreement on, you know, accounting principles or how to disclose things, the city's more than welcome to go out and talk to a third-party auditor or another CPA and get their opinion. The only thing that we ask is if we also have access to that third-party person so that all of us can get together, come to a consensus, and we can move on with the audit and issue our opinion. All right, so the findings, like I said, there were a couple of things that needed to be corrected this year. Both of them were state compliance findings. So the first one is open and public meeting requirements. And what this requires is every year the city council members need to attend a training on Utah laws and regulations in public meetings. And I think that, who came down and did it? Who comes down and does it?
County attorney.
Okay. A lot of times that you can get somebody from the state that will come down and do it. LeGrand will come down and do it. But anyway, that didn't happen during the year, but when we talked to them about it, I think they realized, and so it had already happened by the time we had come and done field work, but it didn't happen during that period. And I would actually recommend that you guys, having new council members, probably do that training again. Before the year end.
Because that was done in November, wasn't it?
Yeah, it would have been done after year end, but before we issued the audit. Yeah. So anyway, it's just good information, and the state is always changing, and the state auditor is always changing his mind about stuff. And so just to keep up on stuff, I would recommend doing it. Just schedule it the same month every year, if you can, just so you remember, and then just make sure that the training happens. The next finding is the Money Management Act that we talked about. So this one is kind of the reason why it's not a serious issue is because they changed the way that you have to submit the reports now. It used to be that you actually would type them in, print it out, and send it in hard copy. And then we could always get a hard copy from the city. Now everything is done online. And so as the numbers got put in and then it got submitted, it didn't get saved or there was a glitch in the system. So when it got submitted, it was actually the previous report balances. So every 6 months, you're required to report to the Money Management Council what your cash is in any financial institution, whether it's the PTIF, whether it's a bank, whether it's investments. And so every 6 months, you have to do that. And so what it did is it reverted back to the previous report balances. And so when we downloaded the report, it looked like it hadn't been filed for the year, but the date was right, but it was all the balances that were previous. And so we just had to have them redo it and submit it again. And that's actually happened a lot more than, something was wrong with the system because we had so many clients that had that same issue where they would submit it and it would revert back to whatever the numbers were previously. So it wasn't saving it properly and correct.
Would your recommendation then to cure that, keep a hard document on top of that?
I would. It's good for me because I hate trying to download it. That's the worst website to try and actually what we have to do now, we can't even download it anymore. We have to actually have them pull it up and do a screenshot and then we can look at the screenshot. And I think that's completely inefficient. It's stupid.
That's crazy.
So if it allows you to print it, I would just print it and then or screenshot it at the time and print it and keep a hard copy. Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Findings from last year, there were, and this last year finding was, so this would have been for the 2018 year, we're just required. One of the things that we have to do is, as soon as we get on site, is we'll go through the prior year findings and make sure that things have been addressed and taken care of. And this is one kind of an ongoing recommendation that I would give you is, it could, because we see this a lot, is that there were a lot of outstanding checks that hadn't been cleared. So people either lose the check and then they don't ever cash it, or the check gets, you know, whatever, it gets destroyed or whatever. So we just recommend periodically just going through the old checks and either, you know, if it's money that you owe somebody, just send it to the state collections. Otherwise, figure out what's happening with the checks, especially if they're vendor checks. If vendors aren't cashing checks, then it's just the reason why it's an audit issue is there may be this check out there that says that it's outstanding, but you know, maybe somebody took the cash and walked off, and then there's this outstanding check that's never going to clear the bank because it never got issued, really. And so it's just an internal control to really make sure you know what's happening and you know where the cash is going. You know, same as your personal checking account. It's just, you know, if you've got these outstanding checks, you don't know what they are, and you don't know how long they've been out there. You don't know how much money you really have. If one of them is a $400,000 check and all of a sudden, 9 months down the road, somebody decides to deposit it, then, you know, that's a big hit you weren't planning on. So anyway, other issues, I think the city's in a pretty good spot. We've done some internal control testing for the city in the past that I think was beneficial for the city council and for, you know, for the staff. You know, if there's ever any issues or any questions, don't hesitate to reach out. I'm not really in the office a lot, but I'm always available by phone. Dave usually can get a hold of me really quick. And, you know, let us help you work through issues that come up. You know, there's a lot of times I'll tell Dave, well, this is what I would recommend, but I can't tell you what to do because I can't impair my independence. So I really can't be the one that says, hey, this is what you guys need to do. But I can give him a whole lot of options of, well, try this and this and this, and you know, these are the things that he put in place to make things happen. But I think we have a pretty good relationship with the city, and we love coming down here. And I know that there's been issues in the past that we've worked through. And like I said, I think right now, I think this city's in a pretty good spot. So keep up the good work, and welcome to City Council life, I guess.
Thank you. It's been good.
Just a question, because we can always better, is my opinion, we can always be better. On the check thing, on that, he was just going over, is there, compared to other cities, are we like a lot higher number versus, I mean, it doesn't really state a number. Were we significant amount versus?
I mean, there's, I would give you one example of, so answer your question, no, you're not any better or worse than anybody. Okay. I mean, it just sometimes it just randomly happens that we see a bunch that are quite old. And usually it's one of those things that gets forgotten, and then we'll kind of bring up a reminder to, hey, you need to go through these checks and clear them out. I know state code says if you owe money to anybody and it's been, is it a year? Then you actually have to send the money to the state. So you void that check and you send it in their name to the state. So when you hear, hey, call in and see if we owe you any money, that's what they're talking about, is somewhere, somehow, you were owed money that you've never claimed. And so, but the reason why it's a big deal is we had an issue with the city. It's been probably 10 years ago, but they had a lot of outstanding checks. And what happened was somebody went through the vault and found a bunch of old voided checks. And so what the city finance guy was doing is he would physically write a check when he was going to transfer money so he could keep track of how he was transferring money to the other funds. And so somebody on the council just happened to be looking through the vault one day and found all these checks and thought, well, what the heck's all this money? Like, there's all these checks sitting in here that never cleared the bank. And immediately called the state auditors and called the KSL News, and I woke up in the morning and saw this whole big article on, you know, we have a city manager who's committing fraud. And so it turns out, you know, when they went down, they found out that all he was doing was writing checks, but he was never cashing them because it was happening in the books. It's just that the checks never really had to go through the bank because it wasn't really a physical change of hand to cash type transaction. But here's all these, you know, checks that are outstanding. And so it was an unfortunate situation, and I think he ended up getting let go because I think the council realized that no matter if there wasn't any wrongdoing, they still felt like he needed to be let go. And it was an awful situation. And so, I mean, that's kind of an extreme, but like I said, I usually don't see them more than, you know, a year or two old. But if there gets to be a significant amount that's probably over 90 days, then, you know, I usually recommend, hey, you know, you need to go look and see where these checks are at. And I think most checks can't even be cashed after 180 days. The banks shouldn't cash them. I know they still do, but they shouldn't. So, and that's part of your reconciliation. You know, every quarter or whatever, when you're doing the bank recs, then, you know, it's really good to go through and kind of look and see where things are at. But
So on there, probably not doing that side of it, but there'd be a checklist you create that say, okay, I did the things, I'm sure Dave does it.
Yep.
Went through my checks and went through this. And
yep, and every time you print a reconciliation report, it should print a list of every check that's outstanding. Every month it should print it out. So
the majority of our uncashed checks were recreational paid employees. So you're going in, you're voiding, you're trying to track down someone's $90 check.
Yep.
The officials and stuff, the kids that were the officials.
Yeah. So, it's just one of those ongoing internal control things. Just to, like I said, I mean, last year when we reviewed them, when we came to the audit, I don't think there was hardly any outstanding checks. And so, you know, it had been cleaned up and looked good. It's just one of those ongoing recommendations that we would have for internal controls. I spend a lot of time, you know, I don't do a lot of the detail work anymore. Usually what I'll do is I'll kind of hone in on internal controls. That's where I spend a lot of my time now, is consulting on internal controls and, you know, what you can do to protect yourself. And just for your information, I know that they're trying to legislate that cities and counties and districts and everybody, you're going to have to start filling out a survey for the state auditor. And it's going to have a list of internal controls. And if you don't score, I think it's like 200 points, then they're going to say, well, you have poor internal controls. My opinion of it is, I don't really like it, and I hope they don't legislate it. And I'm trying to fight against the state auditors right now with, you know, and I know the counties are starting to fight against it. Just because what I think they're trying to do is put a square peg into a round hole. They're trying to say, if you pass good on this, then you have good internal controls and you're protected from fraud. And I look at it as all you're doing is lulling yourself into kind of a state of compliance or a state of, I don't even, maybe that's the wrong term, I don't know what term I'm looking for, but just because you have those things doesn't mean fraud can't happen. And what I talked to, you know, Dave about before is, and the previous council is, Mount Pleasant is unique to itself. You may be the same size as other cities, and you may have the same financial balances as another city, but because of your staff, because of where you're located, because of your technology, you have your own set of risks that you have to identify and say, you know what, we have a control issue here that if we don't fix it, there's the potential that we're going to have fraud, whether that's people stealing money, whether that's, you know, manipulating the financial statements, your budgets, whatever. And so really, as a council and management, you really have to say, okay, what's unique to Mount Pleasant and what controls do we have to have in place? So rather than this blanket approach that says, you score good on this and you're good, you know, and one of the things is, do you have an internal audit function? You know, you have an internal auditor on staff. Well, who outside the Wasatch Front can afford to have an internal auditor? Nobody. So you're going to lose points on that, but yet maybe one of the council members is performing that function even though they're not an internal auditor. So you're going to lose points because it's a yes or no question, but yet you have mitigating controls that are actually functioning to protect yourself. So that's why I don't like that, the blanket approach. But it is a good practice to kind of look at internal controls and do walkthroughs and, you know, that's one of the things that we came down and we did a bunch of walkthroughs on numerous areas and, you know, documented, okay, here's all the controls that are in place, here's where you need to fix things. I thought it was beneficial, I don't know if you guys did, but at any rate, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but thanks again for letting us come down. If you guys have more questions.
I have one question. Okay. We had an invoice turned in that's like 18 months old.
Okay.
How do we approach something like that?
Is it legit?
Well, it's hard for me to say because I wasn't here then.
I would probably look back and see if it's been paid or if there's an agreement to pay. I would probably talk to the vendor and say, why the heck are you sending me an invoice 18 months in arrears? And why haven't we been notified before? Because that's an obvious internal control. I would say, just looking face value, they have an internal control problem wherever they're at. Hopefully it's not my company.
It's not.
if you're getting an invoice that late, you know, really...
It throws up lots of red flags, and it's like, how do we approach this? What do we do? Or,
You would just want to investigate and see if it's really legitimate. Really, it was probably budgeted for way back when, a year and a half ago. But you'll just want to make sure that you have the budget for it this year to pay for it, if it is legitimate. Financially, it's not going to be probably a material amount. If it is, if we look at it, if we look at, you know, if it's recorded in this year and it should have been a year or two ago, then we'll look at the dollar amount and say, well, we have to do a prior period adjustment to put it back into that period. So you guys would just run it through the current period, but then what I would do is earmark it, and then we can look at it and say, okay, well, it should have been back here, because if we leave it here, then all of a sudden your financial statements aren't correct, because that expense actually belonged back here.
Yeah.
Frustrating part about this. All the other invoices. So they sent a series of invoices. She starts looking, and several of them, yes, have already been paid before, so kind of like, oh.
Yeah.
And one portion of it had been paid, and then there was another charge on it. So.
Yeah, that's where I would say you need to do your due diligence to reconcile all those invoices versus what was supposed to be charged, what was paid, and then, you know, basically it's probably going to be a pain to get through of, okay, what do we owe on this invoice? Is it legitimate? And then probably just make it good if it is, but... Yeah, that's
how did, you know, 18 months ago, did we actually receive that?
Yeah, well, it's understandable. But that's how it would be treated through the books. Is, okay. You know, it's just going to get recorded in this year if you find out that it's legitimate. And then I would earmark it, and then we can look at it and say, well, it really needs to be back here. So there's other accounting ways that we do it. It actually shows up as, it actually hit your equity account instead of being an expense in the current year. So. Okay.
Yep.
Any other questions? If things come up, if you have questions, like I said, I'm always available and always happy to talk, so. Appreciate the
city. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We'll see you this fall if you don't see me before then.
Most likely, huh?
Enjoy life out there in paradise.
If I'm ever home, my wife's about ready to tell me to take a hike so she can get a new version of me that actually is around. I was in Samoa, we were doing an audit for the American Samoa government. And we were gone for 4 weeks, almost all of January. So that was a fun trip.
That's a good place to go in January.
Yeah. No, it's hot and humid, but it's not that hot. Island time is definitely a reality. And they don't care. They give you stuff.
Thank you. All right, next item on the agenda, approval of the ordinance number 2020-01, amending ordinance. And number of the ordinance of number 2017-01, the amended ordinance of certain meeting times. So what this is to change our city council meeting. This city council meeting, the second one in the month, it will be moved to 6:30 p.m. and it will be treated the same as the first one of the month. So both city council meetings will be the same.
What you were talking about with the opening ceremony, and we'd have that and public participation.
And everything that way.
So the RDA meeting, and that'll come before that then? Or?
You won't have an RDA meeting the second Tuesday.
Well, the first.
Just the first one.
The first Tuesday, we'll still have the RDA meeting at 6 o'clock, and the city council at 6:30, and then this will be the fourth Tuesday. It'll just be at 6:30 instead of 4 o'clock.
Okay.
And it will be the same type of city council meeting with open public and everything else.
I'm good with it. I just want to make sure we go through that right now.
Yes. Yep.
Should we do a motion?
We need a motion, yes.
Well, I'll make a motion to approve this ordinance. Amending ordinance number 2020-1, amending ordinance 2017-1 to make a motion to amend this ordinance.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, I have the motion by Rondi and seconded by Russell I'm just going to read the heading of it. It's the City of Mount Pleasant ordinance number 2020-01, amending ordinance of 2017-01, an ordinance amending a certain meeting times. Roll call. Yeah, it's amending the ordinance. We have to have a roll call on this, right? Okay.
Russell?
Yes.
Rondi?
Yes.
And Sam?
Yes. Okay. Do we have any, even though it's not on the agenda, is there any public input? I see a few faces here wondering if there's any things you have to talk about.
As far as the ordinance or other things?
Other things. Yeah. Would you like to come forward and just kind of say who you are?
Justin Sorensen. Just recently moved into the area. We're over on the east side of on Main Street. I was on the agenda last month, and I was unable to make it concerning perhaps a water tap moved in on this. So Clay Wagstaff owns a piece of land at the end of Main Street going east. There's 4 acres there. He's considering about selling me
a acre or two on that north end there. I know, so I was just curious if there's a way that, could I get a water tap? And I was talking to some of the city workers, but I don't know if there's sewer up that far, but I guess when the north, the eastern neighbors got a well, but I guess there's a couple other folks down on that street that's also got water too. But I know it's not necessarily in the city boundaries, and so I was just kind of exploring that option before we do a land buying, see if that's something. I know I'm talking to Jeannie earlier this week and mentioned that, you know, maybe something had been talked about. I just wonder if there's been any conversation on that, so.
So the area where he's talking, there is three other homes tied under a water service. Years ago, the one newest home that was there was not allowed. That was before anybody's time here. That was back in Chess's day. Why he did that, I don't know, because the main is there. There is no sewer up there, but to me personally, I don't, I know where he's talking. I was.
So you're talking right east of 900 East.
Right.
And are you talking Main Street, or are you talking the, I don't know, 50 South, 50 North?
Well, you know where, yeah, so you know where Dixie, my Aunt Dixie lives, yes. That's the road. It's right there on that corner piece on the south corner. So they've got the kind of east of your property there, right there across the street. That chunk right there west of Mike Christensen. So.
Yeah, I know Clay's building that concrete home there.
Yeah.
He's got a tap in there, but he's like, I don't know if they'll tap you in over on that very east end or not. So
it's a 6
Mike
inch
on the well.
Mike's on a well. See, Chess wouldn't allow him to connect, but I don't know why. Years ago,
there is a main right there.
There's a 6 inch main that runs all the way up that north side of that road.
North road there.
Yeah. So it runs all the way up and feeds. We're up to. It's not Mills anymore. Is it still Mills?
Yeah, Dan Mills.
Yeah, it's
Dan
Mills still. Yeah.
Above Mike Christensen.
Mm-hmm. So, because there's a fire hydrant, the dead end right there. And then, who's the other? I'm trying to remember the other older guy in the loaf shack, kind of down the road, who's got a connection. Can't think of his name off the top of my head.
Yeah, I can't think of it either. No, there's Hamilton's down.
Yeah, and then Hamilton's got a connection.
Down lower.
So. But to me, I wouldn't see an issue with it, but there isn't no sewer on that high. It's on Main Street, but it cuts off right there at...
it's right there at 900 East, or
Not quite. Well, it's at the north side. What's the... I'm trying to remember the guy's name right there on the north side of the road, the top house. I'm bad with names, sorry. I can picture his face. Right north of your property.
Yeah.
But,
it's Connie and that's her husband. Ropers, isn't it?
Yeah.
Ropers.
Yeah, it goes, it's dead end right there at their house and it goes right behind their house. So there's a main that cuts behind their house, behind that lot, catching houses that are on the west side of 9th East. So.
How far would you have to run this tap back from the main?
We are looking now, if I understand right, is that main running on that north road there?
There's two mains on it. There's a main that runs on 9th East, and then there is a main that runs up the dirt lane there.
Okay.
To the property. How far east are you looking at?
So where we are looking at possibly building just west side of the home with the well there.
Okay.
Yes. So just down from there, so somewhere in that
west Mike.
Yeah, so he would just have to cross
that field.
Yeah. So he just have to cross a dirt lane right there.
Cause on the so you're right between that and the guy that's building the cement one right next to the creek.
Correct.
And there's a main that runs up that road, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. So
why wasn't Mike hooked into that?
That's why I said I don't know. That was before my time. I knew I was working. I was here, but I was over streets at that time. So I don't know what to deal with, why Chess didn't allow it, but I'm not sure.
So
Are there meters available?
Yeah, that would be all paid for through your connection fees or like anybody else. But, I mean, that's my opinion. I wouldn't see an issue.
Run past Colter.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't have a problem with it. We got a main there.
We got a 6-inch main, so it should be sufficient.
Yeah, the added benefit now versus back then, I think, with Mike is we now have the buffer zone, which is a mile out of the city limits. Before, right. Mike was not in city limits due to the fact before the buffer zone. Would be my main guess, but I mean, that's speculation.
So again, the sewer could be extended, but it would be at your cost.
Correct. Right.
So.
Which I would assume would probably run up that road as well.
Yeah, I would imagine,
at some point. So, yeah, so we have to balance out that expense and see what that would be. So, okay.
Yeah, and usually, again, if you run the sewer line, then you own it for 5 years. If somebody else attaches onto it, then they have to help you offset that cost.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see. Okay, well, that's good to know. And that way we can see how it fits. So,
sure. Okay.
Well, thank you. I guess at this point, when that time comes, we can cross over with Gary to get a building permit, see if that's a good go at that moment then.
I just also recommend the council for providing a service though outside our limits that we would sign a annexation agreement. So at the time and point for providing the water to you, we get an annexation that you would agree to be annexed on.
I understand that Clay also signed that as well, so I would definitely be willing to do that as well. So. All right, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anything else? Report from city council members. Anything you had to report?
I don't have anything.
Hi, Dr. Calder. We're just going to be ramping up efforts to get our roads patched up after the winter months are kind of getting to be behind us. So hopefully we'll see a lot more progress with some road patching.
See, I don't think they'll start on that until the temperatures stay above what? 40?
Probably 50.
Yeah, with the hot as well. I used to have done some cold patching.
I've only been doing quite a few cold patches.
Yeah. Because it's just on some of the real bad spots, he's put in some cold mix.
They've been doing the bags.
And the forecast is, yeah. We're looking to ramp up those efforts.
I've seen too many hot patches put in the old frost. It's just a waste of money.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Sam, do you have anything to report?
I don't.
So you went out and inspected the railroad cars and told them I had to adjust the windows?
Yep. That'll be a project, so it'll be interesting. Yeah, they want compliance. So bedroom windows in that type, it's for fire code, there ain't really many train cars as a motel, so you kind of gray area it, but it still would fall under the category of a motel due to the temporary use permit that they would be doing it as. Under current fire code, they'd have to be required to have an emergency exit in that bedroom. 9-square-foot window, their windows were 21 inches wide, it needs to be a minimum of 36. So they'll have to do little adjustments, but.
Well, I'll tell you, as long as it takes them to cut out a window.
So, but
it's really been a deal.
Yeah.
But you need to be, I mean, to be safe, they got to be up to code. So
You're doing exactly what should have been done a long time.
Yes.
These are things we talked about we got to stick with.
Yep.
I'm with you 100% on it. I'm just saying that out there has been. I've got more comments on it, probably.
It would be pretty tough to require it. They didn't have extinguishers either, so I did suggest that it is. Well, it's going to be required for an extinguisher because there are two separate rooms. I've been to, I don't know how many countless electrical fires. They do have to have smoke detectors, not CO/smoke detector, because there is no output of any gas type stuff that we put out of CO. But there's been, electrical is just as dangerous as anything else for fires.
Yes.
You know, there's been a lot of combustibles out there, and that's the reason for the bedrooms, because there's only, if they have all their dining area and everything in the one room, and then they have the big double door exits for that, then they have another doorway going into the bedroom. So fire starts in the room with the couch and all the tables and that, it would confine them to that bedroom and no way out without doing the emergency exits on the windows. So.
I wonder if they got away with that down at the Big Rock Candy Mountain.
I don't know.
I think they, those were all like the cabooses and stuff, weren't they?
They were more fancier cars. They're not the old style box railroad cars.
I don't know.
Yeah, they weren't the cars.
Yeah.
Yeah, train cars. They were,
I mean,
passenger cars.
Yeah.
Passenger
cars and stuff.
That's kind of the hard thing. I mean, certain things we can really hold to, like the emergency exits, but as part of sprinkling, it's to where there's such a gray area. If they wanted to fight, it would be more of a litigation, because how do you put law on something that doesn't really exist?
Yeah.
There's situations that are kind of a gray area, but certain ones like that are high-risk things that do need to be enforced.
Okay. Couple things I have, just JUV canceled their irrigation meeting, so we didn't meet with them. I did have a phone call from Glenn Pill yesterday, and I'm going to have a chance to get back with him. The irrigation company is looking at piping the cement ditch out there between by the park and coming down and going back over to 7th South, so we need to see how this road project ties into that to dump that water in there. So. Like I said, I haven't got a chance to get back with him, but he did leave me a message on a phone call that they would like to pipe that, which would be nice there along the soccer field to pipe that cement ditch.
Yeah. And they did that. It was nice when they did that years ago with around the rodeo grounds when we did that. Because that's where that, it goes underneath where the train cars are at.
Right.
It's actually a concrete ditch underneath there. So
that's one thing coming up looking at. One other thing with Weston. Leaving us, we did hire Austin Gardner as a full-time public works employee.
And I don't know, I'm just going to suggest when we do that, you know, it's on our, maybe on our regular council meeting, it would be good to have the, like, Schulter or somebody bring him in and just introduce
him.
I think it would be a good idea just to get council from into the phase.
Okay. Maybe we have him come to the next one. We can kind of introduce
yourself. Weston, though.
He went back up north to work for whoever he's working for before. So, and then I know JUB is going to reschedule. I think they're wanting to come a little bit later, as soon as the snow breaks, to go up there and look at those diversions. So,
when is another public meeting scheduled with that?
We don't have anything scheduled yet. They haven't got enough information. That's what he said. That's part of the reason they canceled, is because they were just waiting still on the environmental studies coming back and really didn't have any information to bring to us, so they thought it was a waste of time and effort to come. So.
Good.
And they're the engineering firm.
For the irrigation.
Yeah.
For the irrigation pond. So. I think that's all I have to report. So if there's nothing else, we'll go ahead and adjourn.
Okay. I'll look down for you. Think you're a good grace,
yes. We got you out of here in time, huh?
Yeah. I'm supposed to go